It's time.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right into the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
For Locked On Canucks.
Now Pettersson out on the right wing side. Saucer pass left circle. Besser shoots and scores!
It was good that Brock Lesnar got a goal.
You got a journalist the nut!
The kids continue to get it done!
With Justin Morissette.
He's a weird dude, yeah. It's good to have weird dudes.
Locked On Canucks for Monday, February the 8th, as the Canucks get set to wrap up their three-game series with the Toronto Maple Leafs, a series that has not gone well for them thus far, a series that is not likely to go well for them again this evening. It is your Locked On Canucks. My name is Justin Morissette. Today's episode brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order, and I'll tell you more about their wonderful products later on in the program. Let's get right to it today. Just a road trip that is getting away from the Canucks. Things seeming very, very negative for the team right now, and no better person to talk to when things are that way than my guest today. Let's get to it. Making his return to the program for what has to be a pack-leading appearance. I don't even know how many times he's been on the show because most appearances get doubled up as we talk for so long. I don't know if that's going to be the case today, but I am joined once again by the host of Roxy Fever, Jackson McDonald, making his triumphant return to Locked On Canucks. Jackson, thanks for joining me again just a few weeks after I had you on not that long ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always fun. It's always nice to just be appropriate for me to rant for a long time instead of feeling like I'm, you know, taking over the episode of my own show. So I always relish the opportunity.
Well, I wanted to have you back on, even though it's been, you know, a minute, literally, and there's a lot of people I could have had on again or for the first time before circling back to you. But I came out of our last conversation a little bit nervous that maybe we had overdone it, that we had, like, gone too far in our cynicism. We were talking about how this was potentially a write-off season intentionally, that ownership, rather, had, like, punted on the year to have an excuse to fire management. And that seemed like a conversation that was, like, maybe way overheated for that stage of the season. Like, I felt like we went too far, maybe, at the time. And then not even a week later, it was like we didn't go nearly far enough. The tenor of the conversation in this city has completely changed since you and I last spoke. And it's gone to a place that I think is more suited to what our inclinations are, what our opinions are of this group and kind of where we want this team to go. I said earlier in the week on the show that it's not fun to be right, but as someone who has taken a lot of criticism for some of your big swings over the last couple of years, are you having fun right now?
A little bit. It's never as fun as you think it's going to be, but it has been nice after the year that I had and just how everything ended up coming to a close at Canucks Army and the way that things have rebounded since. It has been kind of rewarding to just be able to retweet constant things and, you know, screenshot articles that I wrote 2 years ago or whatever and just point to them and be like, see, this is what I was saying, and now it's all happening. But, I mean, it's kind of more sad than anything else because, like, I remember I was scrolling across the TL today and I saw an Avs fan that I follow giving Canucks fans the gears over the Quinn Hughes-Kale McCarr comparisons. And that felt really shitty. That was not fun. And I've been kind of, envisioning in my head, like, Leafs or Oilers fans giving Canucks fans the gears about, you know, kind of the same thing when it comes to Elias Pettersson being in that conversation with Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. And I think those guys belong in those conversations. And as much as it's been kind of fun to watch the team fall from grace just because, you know, it's nice to be proven right. I don't want it to be at the expense of those guys. Like I love watching Elias Pettersson play. I want Elias Pettersson to be a superstar for the Canucks, to continue to be a superstar for the Canucks. I want him to get even better. And the same goes for Quinn Hughes. So, you know, I haven't been enjoying the way that they've sucked. That's for sure. If those guys were playing great and it was just like Jay Beagle continuing to pass the puck into the slot to the opposing team, like he did against the Jets that one night, like that would be great. But it hasn't really gone down that way, and so it's been more a bummer than anything else.
Yeah, because you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started the show. There's something additional. There's something extra going on with this team right now beyond the fall that I think could have been foreseen for a good many years. This idea that you cannot simply go out and spend all of your available money every single offseason. That is not a tenable position for any team, especially a team at this stage in the development cycle. Like, this reckless spending with no apparent plan or foresight or forethought whatsoever is going to catch up with you, and we've seen that happen, but we're seeing something extra on top of that, because that, coming home to roost at this time should not also create problems for the way that we had seen guys like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson taking off and their careers, getting started at a very advanced rate at a very young age. That should not be affected by everything that we're talking about unless there is more to it. And we sort of talked about this when you were on the show last, this idea of, you know, every time the camera cuts to either Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson on the bench and they just have a dead-eyed glaze looking off into the distance as if they would rather be anywhere but where they are, you know, there is a mental effect of those things. And I think that is compounded by the fact that these guys just watched a ton of their friends not just leave the team but not even get offers to stay. And we know that Troy Stetcher was a part of this young core. He still is a part of that friend group. When he's in Vancouver in the offseason, he's still going to hang out with all those guys. It's just really, really sad, I guess, because we could see certain elements of this coming, but I guess the mental impact of the negatives of those regressions, I guess, has been really, like you said, upsetting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were to ask someone from out of market who maybe, you know, watches a lot of North Division games or whatever, or keeps their finger on the pulse but isn't a Canucks obsessive, what they'd probably assume that this is just an inevitable regression from, you know, Jacob Markstrom's gone and they lost their. You really can't be understated the impact of losing their two best right-handed shot-suppressing defensemen. Like, that's a major loss that I think maybe we haven't really accounted for as much as we should in the market. But, like, it's not just that. Like, Jacob Markstrom not being in goal anymore doesn't explain why JT Miller is a sub 40% expected goals player right now. Like, that doesn't make any sense. He was well above 50% last year. This season, he's, I think, one of the 20 worst regular skaters in the league by expected goals. That's bizarre. That's not a thing that can be explained by regression. And I mean, I do think that some of this is, what's difficult is that you're basically like a doctor who is looking at a patient that is probably presenting with multiple ailments, and so your tendency is to always want to go for one silver bullet answer, but sometimes you just have a guy with, you know, cancer and cirrhosis of the liver, and he just happens to be presenting with both at the same time. And that's kind of, I think, what's going on with the Canucks. I think it's probably a combo of a lot of things. The team getting worse, the goaltending getting worse. I mean, for as bad as the Canucks' top line has been, they've been allowing one more goal per 60 minutes than expected. So the goaltending, like, has not been good with them on the ice, and I think that plays a role. But if I had to speculate, like, I think it's a bit of the regression, a bit just COVID. Like, I don't know who out there has been going to work through this, but it's not fun. And a bit of what you talked about, where you have well-liked players that not only aren't re-signed, but are also kind of not treated very well on their way out the door. And that can really shake confidence in sort of organizational direction. So, I mean, obviously this is all speculation and no one really knows what's going on, but I do think that, like, as much as, I guess maybe the best way of putting it would be to say that if you didn't want to fire the management 2 weeks ago, I don't think this weird stretch should be the reason for that. Now, you should have probably wanted to fire management like 3 years ago. So if this is what it takes, then fine. I mean, there's a room on the train for you or whatever. But I do think that this team is, believe it or not, like, better than they've looked so far.
And we'll get back to that in just a second, but right now I want to tell you that BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are still in full swing, and BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality television. It is updated real time with odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. You know, you talked about the fact that they're allowing an additional goal relative to what's expected when the top line is on the ice. I don't know if that is necessarily that goaltending has been bad with them on the ice so much as that is an indicator. And I don't know. I don't know how expected goals work. So maybe you can tell me about this. That to me seems like an indicator that they are the line consistently making the most egregious turnovers. The majority of the just pure breakaways that are going on with this team and its defensive breakdowns right now are coming off of just boneheaded giveaways, by and large, from, you know, JT Miller for the most part. But, like, that is what I would say to that, is that, like, well, yeah, of course they're giving up that extra goal when they're on the ice because they're giving up, like, three extra breakaways that we wouldn't expect from them.
Yeah.
It's been insane.
I don't know to what extent you can say that like, that probably plays a role, but at the same time, expected goals should account for that in some way. So I think it's, again, as is going to be a theme across probably all of my answers to these questions, like, I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. But you're right, the lotto line just looks out of sorts defensively. And the funny thing is, offensively, you look at Quinn Hughes, you look at Elias Pettersson basically since that initial run of you know, no points at the beginning of the year. And to a lesser extent, you look at JT Miller and certainly Brock Besser. And, like, these guys are putting up numbers. The boxcar stats look pretty good. If you didn't know any better, you'd be looking at their numbers and you'd be going, oh, everybody's overreacting. They look fine. But defensively, they've been awful. And I do wonder how much of that is psychological, how much of it is just stuff we can't account for, and how much is maybe that they used to have people to bail them out, both on the back end and in net, and they just don't really have those guys anymore like they used to.
This actually ties into something that I've wanted to get into on the show for a few weeks now, which is, like, I do think it's important to remember the way seasons have started in the recent past, because I do think quite often it's really easy to get to the end of a season and have the back half of it be what colors your memories of the entire year. Because, like, you know, this is the third year that Elias Pettersson has been in the NHL. And if you go back to his first year, they had a preseason, the Canucks did, that was so spectacularly awful that I was, like, openly predicting that they were about to be the worst team in the history of the franchise. And, you know, they were somehow able to flip the switch when the regular season started. And Pettersson had that incredible run to begin his career, scoring in that first game and putting up, you know, a ridiculous point per game pace through his first 10. That was the beginning of his career. Year two, however, I was of the mind last season, Jackson, and you can tell me I'm wrong if you remember differently, but, like, the counting stats, you bring that up, and it's a good point, because I kind of felt like last season, Petey had a slow start there as well, and you wouldn't see that reflected if you just looked at his numbers, because he was putting up counting stats night in and night out. I just don't recall really any dominant Pettersson statement games where he took over and you saw the sort of thing that you would expect to see from him that we've saw later on in the season and certainly in the playoffs. The difference is that JT Miller was going to such a level at the beginning of last season that his production sort of masked all of the warts of the team in other places. And I guess this is a two-part question because, you know, I don't know how much different this team would look if you just got one of those guys on the top line going, just one of them. And also, I wonder about the psychological effect, you know, going back to that awful preseason from 2 years ago, when you're able to put a divider between, okay, this is exhibition, and now we just get to wipe those out, and it doesn't mean anything, we can start fresh. What is the psychological impact of not being able to do that when all of your bad preseason results are a permanent stain on your record for the entire season, and whatever negativity comes with that just appears to be, like, snowballing right now?
Well, I mean, when last postseason happened, when the season finally started back up and we got to, you know, we got to look at bubble life and bubble playoffs, like, I was very much of the opinion that we should throw all of this out, that, like, none of it really mattered, that, you know, at the end of the day, like, the Stanley Cup champion will have been legitimate and all that, but that, like, we really shouldn't judge teams too harshly by what happens in the bubble.
I think it also helps that the team that won the cup is the team that everybody sort of thought would win the cup in normal circumstances.
Yeah, totally. If it had been Dallas, it might have been a little bit different. Honestly, you're right. But I was saying that when when the Canucks were doing so well, and I mean, I predicted that they would do well from what I remember. Like, I was pretty sure that they would win the play-in round. And then I was like, yeah, I mean, I think I remember saying that it was pretty much a push or a jump ball or whatever for the series against St. Louis. And obviously I was surprised that they did so well against Vegas, but I was always of the opinion that, like, we can't take anything away from this. This isn't really what you expect hockey to be, NHL hockey anyways. And so now that was how I felt about the team when they were doing well. And so it's really only fair to kind of say the same thing about this whole North Division thing. And I mean, you mentioned the psychology of, you know, not getting that, or the psychological aspect of not getting that preseason. And I think that could play a role, but I also think that, you know, there's also an element here too of the fact that, like, if you have a bad game like the Canucks did against Montreal a couple times, or like they did against the Leafs in their first game against the Leafs, like, you got to go out and you got to go play that team again sometimes the next night. And I just wonder, like, again, just from a psychological perspective, like, what kind of effect does it have that you can't just be like, okay, we played a terrible game against Montreal, Toffoli scored a hat trick, let's go to the club, let's get a bunch of drinks, let's forget about it, we have 3 days between now and the next game.
And our next game is against Los Angeles, and they suck, and it's going to be a palate cleanser. Yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if that plays a role as well. Like, I do think that, as much as, you know, I just feel like I'm at the same place I've always been, and now everybody else is on my level, and that's nice. But I do think that, like, people are in danger here of overreacting when it comes to basically anything other than the kind of mistakes that management has been making for years and years. And what I mean by that is just that, like, you know, Pettersson's hit 7 posts.
Mm-hmm.
How different is the conversation if that was 7 goals instead of 7 posts?
Even, like, 4 goals, you know?
Yeah, we probably wouldn't be talking about his expected goal percentage, you know? Like I think, honestly, that a huge part of their awful start to the season gets back to the kind of criticisms that we've been making of them for a long time, which is just their depth. And I know that a lot of people out there are really keen, like this regime's biggest defenders will be really keen to be like, no, like the bottom six hasn't been that bad and the defense hasn't been that bad. It's just that the lotto line's getting caved. And yeah, I mean, those people have a point. I would definitely get into the weeds with them about arguments over how good the rest of the team has been, because I think that the rest of the team has also not been very good. But I honestly think, like, you have to ask yourself how much of this is just that they basically can't break the lotto line up. Like, they don't have any other offensive options.
Yeah, well, so you're going to – Tyler Motte's been so impressive in the bottom six, you're going to put him on your top line? No.
Exactly. Like, they punt an entire line offensively, plus, you know, like, they have probably 7 forwards that could play in a top six role. And that's being generous. And by that, I mean playing a top six role and also produce offensively. Louis Eriksson doesn't count. And I just think that, you know, some of all this ugliness is also symptomatic of the fact that, like, they just have no pieces to move around. Like, the Horvat line's cooking, and you don't want to break them up, especially with, you know, Nils Höglander being found money. And then you have your lotto line, and it's like, what are you going to do? We've seen Brock Besser get bumped down to a line with Adam Gaudette, and the results are always kind of a bummer. And if you do that, who's going to come up and play with Pettersson and Miller? Like, as much as the underperformance offensively of the top line has been the big story through this first run of games here, I still think that eventually, if you get deep enough into the analysis of why that's happening, it eventually does come back to just, like, the same shit that everyone's always talking about, the bad contracts and the lack of depth and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even if that's not specifically the thing that's causing them to lose right now, you just kind of can't do that. You can't be losing and have $30 million in the press box. It's just not going to go over with people. They're going to blame it on that, even if that's not really the reason why they're losing, or at least it isn't, you know, the biggest reason why they're losing.
You may have heard that I have gone through a bit of a health ordeal over the last several months and am on the mend right now. Part of that recovery process has involved going to physio quite a lot. I have physio appointments multiple times a week, a little early in the morning. I don't always wake up in time to have a nice breakfast and start my day off right before I have to go to the gym and really get to work on rebuilding my leg here. This is real. This is real. I don't always have time for breakfast, but what I do have time for on my way out the door before I head to physio is a Built Bar. And you might be wondering, what is that? Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. I have the sampler box in my home right now. That is not just a slogan, that is the truth. These things are covered in chocolate and are soft and easy to chew. They are delicious as well. Just listen to some of these flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, a personal favorite of mine, that one right there. The lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, peanut butter brownie. The list goes on. Salted caramel, raspberry. It is one thing to try to ascribe a name to a flavor of a health product like this. It's another thing to actually live up to the promise of those names. And I can tell you that the peanut butter brownie tastes exactly what you would want a peanut butter brownie bar to taste like. These things are delicious. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy. They can help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat at the same time. They are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and high-fiber. Great for the keto diet. And if you want to try them, I want to help you do that. All you have to do is head on over to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 20% off your next order. Just use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And I just, like, feel bad for Travis Green right now because...
Oh, me too.
Like, what options does he have, you know? I don't think he's entirely helped himself. You know, you talked about how you don't want to split up the Horvat line because it's really cooking right now. Well, that is the line that they've split up instead of breaking up the Lotto line. Or originally, rather, they split up that line to, I think, put Hoglander on the Lotto line and see if he could, you know, get that work ethic to maybe rub off on his line mates the way we've seen it have an appreciable impact within games on both Pearson and Horvat. I think when Hoglander has those, like, tenacious monster shifts where he refuses to lose a battle anywhere on the ice, it does have a noticeable impact on the way Tanner Pearson plays and the way Bo Horvat plays. It has not, unfortunately, had an impact when they put him with other players. They have not been able to find that magic. But I was kind of frustrated that when they did decide to put the Lotto line back together, they still kept the Horvat line apart because that's where Louis Erickson slotted in during Saturday's action against the Leafs. It's, you know, but at the same time, like, what do you do if you're Travis Green? You're in a lame duck season. You don't have a contract beyond the end of this year. And you are, you know, been given probably one of the worst mixes of players that you've had to work with the entire time that you've been with this team. So what is he supposed to do? At the same time, you know, we talked about the needless loss of a guy like Troy Stetcher. And I wonder how culpable Travis is in a situation like that, too, because one of the conversations that we always had with Troy Stetcher year over year over year was it seemed like no matter what he did, no matter how much he did that should have proven himself to this coach, because of how tall he is, this is a guy who just was never going to like him and was never going to, you know, maybe give him the respect that he deserved. And if Travis maybe had more public respect as this for this guy as a guy you could win with, who knows? Maybe Troy Stetcher is still a Vancouver Canuck right now.
Well, and I mean, reportedly, Green did go to management, you know, like a few weeks before the start of the season and said, you need to get me another guy because I can't play, I can't coach this defense. And I mean, it just as an aside, like, it really is an indictment of everyone involved in the decision-making process that Quinn Hughes has spent so much time with Jordy Benn this season and that we've seen Jalen Chatfield in a regular role. And I don't like when people frame things like that as these sort of small victories, because it's like you just were one game away from the conference final and we're talking about how, oh, it's a small victory that, like, Jalen Chatfield can play a couple NHL games and not look like a pumpkin. Like,
yeah,
that's not where,
and look,
we're at anymore.
I'm guilty of that. You know? I just had that conversation with Cody not even two days ago.
Yeah, I don't mean to put you on blast or anything, because it's not, you're just responding to, like, the market and what is a talking point in the market, and there's not, you know, it sucks to talk about shitty stuff all the time.
Exactly. Like, I wanted to have one nice thing that I could talk about, you know?
And that's fine, but it just, you shouldn't lose sight of, and I don't think you have, but some people have, of, like, the fact that this team shouldn't be there. Like, as great as the Nils Höglander story has been, he probably shouldn't be on the team either.
Yeah.
He should probably be back in Sweden developing. And, like, because he's been so good, that really, there's, you know, that hasn't been a talking point as it, you know, and as it should be. Like, there's no, he's been one of the best players on the team, but like, it's the Canucks should not be at that point in their development curve now after what we saw last year. But getting back to the Troy Stetcher and the defense thing, like, I, you know, letting Stetcher walk is one of those things that, yeah, like, I wouldn't have done it, but you also could have replaced that guy, right? And to some extent, they did with Travis Hamonic. But the problem is that Hamonic's A, been hurt, and B, was a real coin toss. So, like, this, there's been a recurring issue with this team where there's just too many players in the lineup that are a coin toss. And it's actually kind of astonishing, you know, getting back to Hoglander and Chatfield and guys like that, like, it's actually kind of astonishing how often the Canucks have been bailed out by players like this being better than they're supposed to be. And I guess to some degree, that's a testament to their draft, to the, like, quality of their drafting. But at the same time, they shouldn't be in the lineup. So it's not like, it's not a big victory to me that, for example, a guy like Jalen Chatfield is in the lineup and looking okay when you're supposed to be in the business of competing for championships and taking that next step in your development. So, I mean, as far as Troy Stetcher goes, I missed him a lot, and some of the reasons for his departure could have to do with Travis Green, but that's really, like, actually a fairly small crime in the grand scheme of things.
Of course.
I think that, like, I feel bad for Travis Green too, because I think he earned the benefit of the doubt in the bubble. He coached his ass off, and it's been really disappointing to kind of see how quickly the tide has turned with regard to him, certainly in the market, and then, you know, also maybe with the players too. But I mean, we're still in the speculation stage, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I do want to, before I get into what you just said, I do want to give full credit to Cody Sievertson, who, like, would not take the bait on me even being like, this is a small victory for development, right? He was like, he's fine, but, like, he's not doing anything. And then the very next day, he got lit up for 4 goals in 13 minutes. Yeah. So that seemed like a very prescient conversation, if I don't say so myself, about my own show and the smart people that I bring onto it.
Well, Cody is nobody's fool, so.
Yeah, but, you know, to tie into sort of what you had just said there, like, I think part of the amazing thing about the way, and you said this earlier too, the way that it wasn't just that these guys walked, they were openly disrespected, basically, by the team in the way they were handled when they left. And, you know, it's one thing to do that to any player, but it seems like the Canucks got, like, spectacularly unlucky in the fact that, like, the two guys that they did that to have deep, deep roots with their teammates on this team. So if you disrespect a guy like Troy Stetcher, if you disrespect a guy like Tyler Toffoli, who's best friends with Tanner Pearson, who do you think those guys are going to turn around and complain to?
That's hilarious, because the two guys that I thought you were talking about were Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom. You could say it with all four of the big guys that they lost, because, you know, Quinn Hughes used to call Tanev dad, and Elias Pettersson used to say that Markstrom was like his big brother or whatever. So, I mean, like, yeah, I it's just one of those things where these are hard pills to swallow. When, well, let me try to phrase this a different way. Like, I'm not a fan of the old school hockey man outlook on things, but it has its advantages sometimes. Brian Burke would have absolutely no time for Tony D'Angelo's shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, if you look back on the history of a guy like Tony D'Angelo, not to bring up that thread because we don't have time for it, but, like, his biggest defenders were in the stats community, right? Because he was a guy with like a lot of good underlying numbers, good, you know, PGPS, if you're into the sort of prospect draft analytics and stuff.
I believe I have famously said in the past, you don't win an extra cup for being nice. So,
yes,
you know.
Yeah, for sure. And, but there is like one of the things that if you're going to be a team that what I'm getting at is if you're going to be a team that prides itself on caring about the human element and the intangibles and then goes out and proves it, fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have access to information I don't and we don't, and you know these guys and I don't and we don't. So there are certain things where sometimes you got to give the benefit of the doubt to a hockey man who's been around for a long time and has proven it. And there are guys like that are like that in the league. And you know, often a lot of them kind of have a best before date, but it is what it is. But the thing that makes the Canucks failures so unforgivable, in my opinion, is that you trotted out the leadership and intangibles so many times with guys like Jay Beagle, with guys like Brandon Sutter, Eric Gudbranson. You know, it's been the common refrain anytime this regime has needed to defend free agency or trade moves that on its face didn't really make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're in a position where you have guys that are actually kind of in the same boat, because I wouldn't have signed either of the Markstrom or Tanev deals. That's assuming that they would have had to sign the same deals here, which I'm not sure is the case, but
yeah.
Setting that aside, like for you to use that excuse so many times, and then when the time finally comes where you could overpay a guy who you could actually make the case for it, you know, like a Jacob Markstrom or a Chris Tanev. And then we hear things like, you know, Rick Dhaliwal saying that, or was it Dhaliwal? I can't remember. I'm sorry if I'm misattributing this, but someone on the radio said that Chris Tanev basically couldn't believe how he was treated in Vancouver on his way out the door after, you know, like a decade here. To me, at that point, that is indicating to me that you are just failing at the basic, like the most basic elements of your job at that point. Because we know that you make really poor decisions in free agency. But now with the departures of Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom in particular, and then also Tyler Toffoli and Troy Stetcher to a lesser extent, we know that also the importance that you supposedly place on the human element and the intangibles and people being good in the room is actually horseshit, because you didn't have the money around to pay those guys who are good in the room when you actually maybe needed to do it and would have been justified.
Well, here's the thing. Leadership is not a thing you can buy. You know?
Yeah.
It is something that is built up over time. It's built through trust and relationships and tenure. You need to be somewhere for a long time for the guys to look up to you in the way that, you know, you would want the guy. Like, Andrew Ferentz has come out and said that it was a big mistake for him to go to Edmonton because they wanted to buy leadership, and that's not possible. You can't do that. You
know, Mark Messier, baby.
Yeah. And
that's the best fucking example, and this market should know that by now.
Well, like, there's...
You can't buy leadership.
There is an example that I can give from this past offseason, and it's maybe a little myopic because, of course, I, of all people, have been following this situation a little more closely than others, perhaps.
Sure.
Eric Gudbranson is in the Ottawa dressing room this season, replacing another former hometown defenseman by the name of Mark Borowiecki, And at the beginning of the season, I was really rubbed the wrong way by a Gudbranson quote to the Ottawa media saying that the last several years here have been unacceptable. when, buddy, they would have been even worse if you were there. So what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that is not something that you should say about a team that you have literally just arrived in the day before. Meanwhile...
Yeah, it stinks of, as a line cook, it stinks of, like, the same energy as when, the owner's rich asshole kid, like, gets a job and starts cooking next to you and has no fucking idea what he's doing, but acts like he's too good for the place.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it's and people do need to remember that this is ultimately a workplace and that it's still subject to the same issues that you would run into in your workplace.
Meanwhile, I've been reading a lot of Mark Borowiecki quotes out of Nashville. I don't know why I would be so interested in reading those, but regardless, like, I've seen a ton of quotes from him where he's asked about the leadership group and the way things work in Nashville, and he will talk about the way things are going this season, but he is not willing to speak about the way things have been in previous years because he wasn't there. And that is the case for anyone that the Canucks have gone out and paid for and said, oh, they're providing all this valuable leadership. No one looks up to Jay Beagle because they just met him yesterday. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Come on. Anyways, one last point before I want to let you go here, Jackson, and it's something that I only just thought of when you were talking about the way Travis deserves the benefit of the doubt, and I think this is a little slept-on tragedy of this season is that, you know... The things that we learned about Travis Green as a coach in the bubble during last year's playoffs, that this is a guy who is very smart tactically, who is someone who can make the necessary adjustments over the course of a seven-game season to match his team against whatever the opposition is throwing at him. You know, you would think all of those qualities would translate perfectly, would make this a perfect season for a guy like that, where you get to play the same team four times in a row over the course of 6 days or whatever, right? Like, that is the ideal situation for a master tactician who likes, you know, the challenge of having to match his opponents. I think it is, like, the most scathing indictment of this roster that we know Travis Green can do that, and this is how the Canucks are faring right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be a shame if, you know, you kind of figure that, I mean, look, if things keep going the way they're going, the Canucks are going to clean house this offseason. There's no way that if the Canucks have a losing season this season, that the management group is going to remain intact. And if the management group doesn't remain intact, you got to figure the coach is probably gone too. And that could be something, especially with Seattle right next door and being without a coach right now, like, that could be something that they look back on in a few years and could really be kicking themselves over. Because I do ultimately think Travis Green is, at the very least, an above-average coach. I don't know how above average I would put him, because it can be hard to know. Like, I'm not an X's and O's guy. I'm more of a big picture guy. And so I have to leave a lot of the in-game analysis stuff, things like set plays, things like breakouts, defensive structure. I have to leave that to smarter people who know more about the ins and outs of the game on the ice. So all I'm really left with is, like, lineup decisions, which is what most fans base coaching off of. And the results there have been somewhat mixed sometimes, but I also think that, you know, it's hard to know, like, what would Travis Green do with a good team, right? That was a talking point the year that Mike Gillis got hired and ended up actually retaining Alain Vigneault, and which ended up, I think, being the right move. But, you know, sometimes, and Alain Vigneault was a good example, a coach coaches a certain style because that's what they feel like they have to do with the roster they have. And so if Travis Green is going to his general manager and saying, get me players to play this style, that's a problem for me. But I don't get the sense that that's the case. So it's going to be a real shame if they punt on this season and end up having to walk away with Travis Green and don't end up hiring somebody who's better. Because I'm not sure there are options out there for them right now that are any better.
Yeah, I really do feel like the people who are so desperate to pin this on Travis and want Green fired maybe don't have the freshest memories of what the Willie Desjardins experience felt like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, one more game in this series with Toronto where the Leafs, man, that was the saddest part of Saturday's game was that 5-1 final, it looked like it could have been a 20-1 final.
Oh, yeah.
And the Leafs just, like, weren't interested in doing that. They were like a cat playing with a mouse. I can kill you at any time, and it's more fun for me not to. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And you know, this is sort of the way things look like they're going to go this year, because not like I honestly really felt at the beginning of the season that Toronto was going to be a decent matchup for Vancouver, because they also
yeah,
play sort of wide open defensively. And just, you know, I thought these would be fun run and gun games, but no one on Vancouver is running at the moment. And certainly, you know, outside of maybe the second line, no one is gunning either. So.
Yeah.
To me, it just seems like anyone with depth is going to crush this team, because even the Calgary Flames have had a real hard time picking up any other wins other than the two they got against Vancouver at the beginning of the year. What do the Flames have in common with the Habs and the Toronto Maple Leafs? All three of those teams have four lines. They have forward depth. And if you have that, you're just going to kill the Canucks this season. It is as simple as that.
Yeah, and I will say, I think they are gonna improve a little bit and probably at least climb back into the playoff conversation once they get to play a stretch of games against Winnipeg and Edmonton. But I mean, ultimately, like, these single week or stretch of game doing analysis based on that, to me, is always kind of a fool's errand. And you got to look at the underlying profile and the process. And the reality is, it's not good. And frankly, it's never really been good. So that gives me all the answers I need. But, you know, we're going to see how it goes, I guess.
And you can hear more of those answers each and every week on Roxy Fever. Jackson, thank you so much for coming back to the show. And
anytime,
chilling in a park while you talk to me.
That's right, baby.
Thanks, bud. There it is, your Locked On Canucks for the day. I want to thank Jackson McDonald again for coming back on the show so soon and blessing us with such great analysis there. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. I'm going to be joined by Mike DiStefano of Locked On Leafs and TSN 1050 out there in Toronto. Looking forward to chatting with him about just this series and the way it has gone for Vancouver. Mike, the host of Locked On Leafs, but also grew up a Canucks fan too, so he will have some empathy for us out here on the best coast. Until tomorrow, I have been and will continue to be Justin Morissette, and you've been locked in on Locked On Canucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.